Well, welcome to this episode of the Public Circle podcast. My name is Adam Olson. I'm the member of the Legislative Assembly for Saanich North and the Islands. We are just on the other side of the new year. It is 2020. We're looking forward to what is up in the region in 2020. And with me for this episode is Bruce Williams. And Bruce Williams is the acting CEO.
Interim CEO
of the South Island Prosperity Partnership.
Yes.
I'm on this side of the mic.
You have a future in this. You're really good at it. I can tell right. I'd hire you right now.
You're on that side of the mic.
That's right.
We've spent some time together behind microphones, my friend.
Yeah, previous life in my broadcasting days. You were always a great guest, though. I mean, you're focused and you're well spoken and you're on target and you don't ramble, and it was always fun to talk with you.
Well, I don't know.
But even in the interim days, right before you were elected, we used to do stuff all the time.
That's right.
And it was fun to get some perspective on the peninsula. And of course, when this organization, when South Island Prosperity was being created, you were the guy that facilitated some of the arrangements that we had with the local nations here, with the First Nations.
Remember that? Some of it. Yeah. I heard about this. I read an article about it. And they said, we're going to include First Nations. So I reached out to the organization and said, what have you done?
Yeah.
Well, we've said that we'd like to reach, and this is the way most organizations start.
True.
They say what they want to do, what their intention is, and then they go about trying to figure that out after.
Yeah, kind of a work back thing.
That's right.
Almost.
And I said, well, let me help you out in that. And we hosted a couple of events, I think, did our best to try to get some First Nations involved. And kudos to South Island SIP, I guess.
SIP,
South Island Prosperity started as a project, now as a partnership.
That's right.
Kudos to you for continuing to build those relationships.
Thank you. Well, there's three basic principles behind this organization. We're the economic development agency for the South Island, for one thing. So economic development is a term, is kind of a process. Instead, we call ourselves the Prosperity Partnership because prosperity is the outcome. Right. Of the process. So that's why we identify that way. So three guiding principles for us. One is to create household sustaining jobs. Number two is to facilitate and accelerate self-directed economic development for First Nations. And the third is to attract investment from other levels of government back in. So we have municipal members that are a part of our matrix right now, but getting money back from the province and the feds, because most of our tax dollars, as you well know, leave the region. We want to go and bring it back to invest in solutions and in people and in jobs and in projects that we do here. So the First Nations part of it is one that is a part of, I guess, economic reconciliation in a way, but it's, fundamentally, it's the right thing to do. And we're not going to be, and I've met with all of the nations. They've been very generous and kind in welcoming me into their territories for me to explain what it is that we are trying to do here. And I go to them and I say, I want you to tell me what to do. I'm not the white guy riding in with all the answers. I want you to tell us what we need to do to help you achieve everything you can and be all you can be. And that's been very exhilarating. And it's been a huge learning experience for me too, as much as I think all of us glean what we can through media or whatever, until you actually sit down and hear the stories and the words from the mouths of these nations, you don't really get it. So it's been a huge learning curve for me. Let me just tell you quickly about a project we did earlier. A couple of months ago, something called the Indigenous Prosperity Gathering, where we invited the 10 nations from this region to get together with us behind closed doors for them to tell us what to do. What do you need? What do you want? What do you want to do? What do you want for your kids and your elders and your economy? And we learned so much from that. Our membership now includes 9 of the nations in this region. We started with 2, and we're up to 9 now. And it's been, like I said, it's been exhilarating. It's been humbling. Feeling very honored to work with these nations. And the things that were said out loud at this gathering are things that you would be familiar with, but a lot of people aren't. The ongoing and the residual effect of residential schools is something that people, I don't think, really understand until it's put in the terms that the nations themselves can say that, our parents had their ability to parent taken away from them.
Correct.
And as parents, they had their children taken away from them. You put that perspective in front of anybody else and tell me that's not going to cause problems and dysfunction. And it absolutely does. The nations, by their culture, historically over thousands of years, were also not capitalist. It's not the way it was. We're working within a capitalist system right now through entrepreneurialism and everything that we do, but that's not the system that we should expect the nations to conform to. They have a whole different way of doing things, and we want to do everything we can to catalyze that and find them the resource that they need to become all they can be with their own economy. So that's one of the things that we want to do.
One of the interesting things is there's perspective, not capitalist does not mean not business like.
Oh, totally, yeah.
So I think that one of the things that that we have to overcome is this perspective that that the Indigenous nations that are in this area were not business minded. You know, and I think that one of the things that I often say in the legislature is that the relationship that Indigenous people in this province have with the natural world and with resources is a different one than we currently have.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't mean that we weren't harvesting with great precision natural resources, refining them into products and trading them in a with business relationships and developing business relationships. I mean, we even had on the west coast of this province, on the west coast of this country, a trading language called the Chinook jargon, which started between Indigenous nations that couldn't communicate with one another. The merchant class were created this entire language, this entire jargon, which was a mishmash of languages. When the Europeans showed up here, immediately started to incorporate English words and French words because of the business sense, the trading sense, not capitalist, but very much, what do you have on that boat? What do I have on the shore? And how can we complement each other?
And within the nation culture, it's also sustainable, right? It's not it's not doing what we've done to the planet. So we have a lot to learn from that, all of us, as we do too. The things that were said out loud, the I wrote some of these down from the from the event that we did. This is out of the mouths of one of the nations that attended. I won't say who it was because this was all confidential. 95% of federal resources being spent on the management of programs and services, but only a small part to economic development. Therefore, the funding is in place for the problems, not the solutions.
That's beautiful, isn't it? Well articulated.
And we're all going, wow, like, wow, is that ever bang on? And getting others to listen to that is really quite a challenge in a lot of ways. Collaboration on education is a priority, including on language. You and I are right now in the Wasanich territory, which I gratefully acknowledge that I've been welcomed here. Thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So having that kind of understanding among all of us as citizens of this region is important. And it does kind of focus on the idea of wellness too. Our event happened, for example, at the Songhees Wellness Center. That's where we all gathered. Any culture, whether it is First Nation or otherwise anywhere in the world, only has the capacity to grow and succeed if they are well enough to manage it and to take it on. So the reason that the Wellness Center is called wellness is that it's a part of the healing and it's a part of creating a healthy lifestyle to create wellness within a community. We can all learn from that, Indigenous or non, that the wellness, I mean, we all system-wide in our culture have issues that we deal with all the time, a lot of it based on mental health, addictions. These are all things that are meaning that the community is not as well as it could be. The cliche I use all the time is we are only as strong as our weakest link. And if that weak link is keeping certain people from succeeding and being well, that's a problem. We have to deal with that and we have to heal and we have to make wellness a common thing in our culture in order for all of us to succeed together and individually.
13 municipalities, 10 First Nations, 23 jurisdictions in a relatively tight geographical area with just under 400,000, around 400,000 people, is safe for the sake of argument. Although we're not going to argue. About 400,000 people in a region, you know, with a lot of governance. A lot of governments.
26 layers of government.
A lot of boundaries that don't exist. They're just, you know, lines that someone drew on a map at some point in time, a long time ago. No one's ever questioned those recently. You know, just they're there. So they must exist. The South Island Partner, the South Island Prosperity Partnership is an endeavor to blur those lines.
Well, the best way to explain it in our terms is that we may have these 26 levels of government, federal, provincial, CRD, municipal, and First Nations. Sure, there's municipal and political boundaries, but it's only one economy. You know, I've been in my trip to see you today here in Sydney, I've probably been in five of them, maybe six. My wife and I live in View Royal, drive through Esquimalt, go into the office in downtown Victoria, come back through Saanich and then through Central Saanich, skirt on North Saanich, come into Sydney. Happens all the time. That's one economy, man. I mean, people, you live one place, you work in another, you shop in another, your family lives in another. That's one economy. That's each municipality and each nation does have its own distinct DNA and character. That's for sure. Each is its own distinct culture, which is fine. We respect that. We are a non-political group and we don't affiliate one way or the other with anything like amalgamation or political decisions or whatever it might be. But we're one economy and we have to work together as that one economy. We have a large industrial base here on the peninsula, right? There's also industrial locations throughout the rest of the region. That's one economy. That represents everyone together. And the fact that we have this matrix of membership that includes industry, post-secondary, municipal, First Nations, nonprofits, we represent this huge ball of influence in this region. There is no other organization that has what we have. We're distinct from a chamber for that reason. Chambers exist to foster business growth and advocate and impose policy and criticize and praise policy. We don't do any of that. We're simply the voice of business and municipal governments and First Nation governments to represent this critical mass of economy that is the one economy in this region. So that's why we encourage the province and the feds to take a look at what we're doing and better understand how they can invest in us for the solutions that we're trying to create. We've had some degree of success with that to date. Not as much as we'd like, but we're working on that. That's a priority for the year going forward too.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a bunch of different times about getting the provincial government's attention on on the work that's going on, and it is a project. It is a project, and it's one that I think that we come from, it's interesting, we've kind of seeded this conversation with the Indigenous perspective, and going back to colonial times. I've got myself into, I wouldn't say trouble, but people criticize me for talking about our resource, the mentality that we have, where we still view ourselves as a resource colony. Mm. So like, to some extent, if you can't hew it and you can't draw it, you know, if it's not a natural resource, then it's not part of the economy. And we have got a really, really, I think, old sense about us here in BC, going back to when back to the trading days when the HBC showed up on those boats, that if you can't extract it and ship it, then it's got a weird relationship with this province. And I think that we, going forward, if we are going to be a sustainable province, if we're going to have a different relationship with nature and all of the resources that provide the wealth for this province, they're not as plentiful as they used to be. And so we're going to need to find other mechanisms. I know that the government says to us, what are your ideas for new revenue streams? You know, I think this is where we need to get innovative and creative. And that's not what governments do well. They're not, you know, these machines of creativity that are just coming up with it. We do some things really well, which is get ready for the next election. We don't do, you know, innovate the economy very well.
I think a lot of us, our organization included, will very often go to government and say, we have this great idea. We think you should support it. We probably haven't done as much thinking as we should on what actually is the mandate of the government. And I give them great credit, whatever level of government it might be, for doing what's in the best interest of their citizens. So instead of us sort of taking a closer look at how can we help government succeed, we seem to have always been saying, well, we have a great idea and you should support that.
Yeah, right.
So we're trying to get our head around how that would best work too. And the other part too about the resource extraction, because we're an island, the rest of Canada is manufacturing based in a lot of ways, which involves the export of product. We're not in a very good position to be exporting. There are some organizations on the peninsula
do
a very good job of it here. But in general, that's not where we can go forward, which is the reason why technology in the tech sector has become the largest sector of our economy, because that's not something that involves the export of a product or the manufacturing of a product. And from the point of view of being environmentally strong, to be, I hate the term green, but being, you know, sustainable, there's always the danger of exporting products as being seen as carbon intensive. Mm-hmm. Much bigger problem for us is the importing of goods. You know, we import, I can't even imagine, 50 times the amount that we export from here. Mm-hmm. So we have to find ways to be more locally sustaining, which is why we're doing what we can to engage with the agriculture sector, for example, here on the peninsula, on the West Shore, to find ways to create. We were part of creating a feasibility study into a food processing hub for this region, meaning that products don't have to be exported to be processed and brought back again. Mm-hmm. That's lower carbon footprint. That's jobs. That's food security. That makes a lot of sense. Something that this is not even close to coming to fruition, but we've been thinking on the idea that, you know, animal food production is a very heavy carbon footprint. I don't think we're probably four or five generations away from the majority of people being plant-based diet. We will still be eating animals for some generations to come, but there is no facility on the South Island to speak of to process those animals. So those animals are being put in trucks. They're being put on a ferry. They're shipped across to Abbotsford. That's where they're dispatched. That's animal cruelty in a way. So the health and safety of those animals, even though they are ultimately going to be food, to do that process closer to home is much kinder to the animals. And it boosts the economy and it's a lower carbon footprint. So things like that have popped up on our radar for us to start looking at.
Fundamentally, communities that look after their food supply and water supply are ones that are resilient and, yep, and sustainable and able to deal with disruptions more adeptly than those communities that rely on food to be produced elsewhere.
That's right. I'm going to paraphrase Gandhi, who said something to the effect of, you can tell a lot about a culture by the way it treats its animals. And, you know, those of us that are pet lovers and animal lovers, I'm a hypocrite because I do eat chicken and I do eat fish. But, you know, in an ideal world, that will change for all of us for all of the right reasons.
You know, one of the things that I'm often critical about is how we measure the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we have GDP, which kind of just throws everything into a big pot.
It's easy to understand.
You know, where are we at? Are we better than we were? Yeah. Are we worse than we were? Oh, right. One of the things that that SIP has done is the Prosperity Index.
Prosperity Index.
And
that's right.
I attended an event in 2019, a whole long time ago now, way back in 2019. Way back in April. And I am assuming that you're going to be doing this again.
Yes, we will in April.
So the index, it was every 2 years?
Every year.
Every year.
Yep.
So coming up in a few months here, we're going to go through and look at the region through the lens of a variety of metrics. And
that's right.
Was what I've been suggesting that we need to do. We need to be more sophisticated at the provincial government. Mm. GDP is fine. It gives you an idea. There's also some pretty perverse things that can be added in to say, oh, look at how our economy is. You know, I think that the example of the kind of the biggest example of this for me was when Trans Mountain said that an oil spill would benefit the BC economy because of all the money that we would spend cleaning it up.
It's false
and
economy.
Anybody who hears that goes, that just makes me really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But, you know, it would impact the GDP in a way that we would then be able to say our GDP is strong. So anyway.
But when the spill goes away, that economy goes away too.
That's right. So talk about the index and measure and how you're measuring a variety of things in the region.
Yeah. So the way we explain it normally is that it's kind of like the vital signs report that the Victoria Foundation does every year is about the health and well-being of this community. The Prosperity Index is the same thing for the economy, not for the general sort of population and social structure. There are indices that are included in this report every year that we're going into the third year now. So the first year was sort of the baseline. Every successive year, we'll compare those things to the previous year and previous years to see where we're trending, what we're doing, where we're going, what part of the economy is growing, what are the strengths, what are the weaknesses, what are our challenges, what are our successes. So it's everything that's kind of tuned into our wellness, to go back to that term once again, too. It looks at transportation. It looks at workforce. It looks at the mobility, the cost of living. The things that right now that are a challenge to our economy, go to any major employer right now, and they'll tell you that their number one challenge is workforce, finding employees, finding skilled employees, unskilled employees, because we're a very expensive place to live.
It's across the region.
Yeah. And pretty much everybody is in a circumstance that they have to keep paying more and more to their people, which is not a problem. But if it's not sustainable to your business case, that is a problem. Trying to attract from across the country or around the world, certain wages have to be paid for people to come here. Finding spousal employment is an issue. Establishing the ability to purchase a home. Generations now are realizing that they may never own a home. That's going to change the profile of our neighborhoods, where the North Saaniches and the Gordon Heads and the Fairfields and Oak Bays and Saaniches of the world, where you can have a quarter acre lot with a 3,000 square foot home and you've got a pool in the backyard. Future generations aren't going to want that because they can't sustain that, and it has to deal with the density that we need to order to populate our area and provide that workforce. So looking at all of these kinds of factors it's available online. It's on our website if you want to look at, which is southislandprosperity.ca.
We should not try to perpetuate post-Second World War land use.
No.
That was really bad. You know, a whole lot of farmland turned into housing developments, a whole lot of Central Saanichers, 18,000 square foot lots,
mm-hmm,
in a residential neighborhood.
Yeah.
And then the bylaw says you can only put, one living unit on that.
Mm-hmm.
and it's a battle.
These are political decisions by elected officials who are in position to do that. We don't have an opinion on that. We do, however, have the ability to. You do, and that's your job. It's not mine. But we have the ability to create things like this index every year, so that elected officials and municipal staff can look at it and say, oh, okay, so along in lockstep with the province and the feds, we need to take a look at what we're going to do for future planning. So we are a bit of a catalyst in that process. Right. And as an unbiased, unaffiliated organization, nonprofit, non-political, that's kind of the role that we play in bringing forward information, stats, and perspective that haven't really been available in the past. So that differentiates us from, as I say, the chambers who do such a good job at what they do. The Peninsula Chamber here, Denny Warner and her organization, amazing people doing great things. The Greater Victoria Chamber, the West Shore Chamber, the Souk Chamber, the Esquimalt Chamber do what they do, but that's not our business and we don't do what they do. Tourism does what they do because that sector is large enough to handle that. In many municipalities of a smaller size than we are in this region, tourism falls within economic development. But because tourism is such a big industry here, it stands on its own. But interesting fact, Viatech, the tech organization, tourism, and now South Island Prosperity all started as committees of the Greater Victoria Chamber and then withdrew to become standalone organizations with their own board, their own governance, their own matrix of operation. So it's been that process that the chambers can feed that part of the economy and make these organizations happen, proving that the need was there.
So part of me wants to say, so, Bruce, according to the index, how are we doing? It's way more complex than that. GDP, we can say, from that one number looks pretty good. From that one number doesn't look so good. When you complexify it, when you make it more sophisticated and you start tracking a number of metrics and you need a dashboard to do this, you're going to say, well, some things are good. Some things we can improve on. You talked about workforce. You talked about affordability. You talked about a bunch of other stuff.
Mobility.
You're looking at a bunch of different ways. So I kind of skimmed right over top of you dropped a website in there and I'll put it in the show notes. But basically, if someone wants to go check out your index, what's the website?
Southislandprosperity.ca.
And you just find a link.
There's all kinds of keys. Yeah, you could spend hours in there. It's really nerdy. You'd love it. It's a great website. I just want to mention, when you mentioned GDP, the GDP stats for this region is one of the reasons this organization was formed. So when the economy tanked in 07, 08, the GDP growth in this region was, I believe, third highest in the country, Greater Victoria, third highest in Canada. By 2013, we were 28th. Out of the 32 measured municipal regions in this country. So the drop in that was because there was no concentrated effort on doing collective regional economic development to diversify and strengthen the economy. At the same time, in 07, the municipality that was 32nd out of 32 monitored municipalities was Halifax, who immediately, boom, right off the bat, created something called the Halifax Partnership, which is their regional economic development organization. And as of today, they are number one in Canada in GDP growth. And that organization was the driving factor in that. So we are trying our best to bring things up to scale on that. Interesting, I thought I had the stat with me, but I don't think I do. Across the country, we are far and away the least funded economic development organization in Canada.
Right.
Average municipal tax dollars invested in economic development across the country, average is about $9.50 per capita. We are at $1.90. At the same time, we can't suddenly go to the municipalities and say, okay, cough it up. I need some more money from you to make sure that we're, on an even playing field and we have this competitive advantage. We can't do that. It's unrealistic, never going to happen. So that's why it goes to number three in our main purpose of going to other levels of government to look for support for us to do what we need to do to bolster and strengthen our sustainable economy going forward.
Does part of this come from the comfort that, certainly as a former municipal councillor, where we first got connected was when I was on local government and we talk about the Saanich Peninsula, as you mentioned earlier on, is part of this kind of a perspective that the local governments may have or the local government politicians may have that this has traditionally been a government town. It's traditionally been a tourism town. It's a university town.
Yep.
And we don't really need to do much else other than that. So things are pretty good. The economy is fairly stable because government keeps paying. And
That's true. That's very true. But for those who are not engaged in government or not engaged in any of that stuff, they represent the rest of the economy. And people who do have good paying jobs, whether they be, a union employee or a tenured employee or someone with that job security, don't really feel that they have a stake in the economy. When in fact they do. They're the consumers that drive this economy. The other jobs here are reliant upon those jobs. So tourism is a very cyclical thing. And my good friend Paul Nursey, who runs Tourism Victoria, does an amazing job, will tell you that it's a very cyclical thing. And frankly, tourism is softening right now. So we've had some really good years. But we're on the verge of a couple of softer years. We're going to feel that. So the people that would have been reliant upon that part of the economy for their sustainability and their livelihood are going to have to find something else. So if there isn't something else there for them, that becomes a problem. So diversifying and strengthening the economy is what we want to do so that we're more resilient of things that happened in 07 and 08. It's going to happen again. Don't know when. Not an economist. I don't know. I'm a talking head broadcaster at one time. So we know it's going to happen and we have to be ready for it. So we can't just lay back and wait for it to happen and hope it turns out okay. We have to prepare ourselves for that. And that's what we're trying to do at South Island Prosperity.
One of the things that the Saanich Peninsula Chamber of Commerce has done very well is connecting people, local government politicians was where when I was a counselor in Central Saanich, where I first got introduced to it. And I've attended a couple of other years as well. But this is the tour of industry. One of the things that that I think, and I'll speak from the politician's perspective, so that you don't have to continue providing the caveat that you're a non-political organization. Yeah. I fully respect that. Actually, I think that's a really important. That is a really important feature of your organization. By the way,
we'd be in a conflict of interest otherwise.
Yeah, and it's a good deal. Yeah. And but we did this tour of industry where businesses opened up their doors, a bunch of politicians and other local leaders walk through and find out just what's behind those kind of nondescript white, black, just plain doors with a name on it.
Yeah,
right?
What's going
on
in there?
What is that business?
Yeah.
Cool stuff.
Very much.
A lot of cool stuff. And it really, as a kid who grew up on the Saanich Peninsula, went to school on the Saanich Peninsula, drove through Keating Business Park two times, three times a day. No idea what was going on in that place. No respect for the level of investment, the level of commitment of the entrepreneurs in that business park in the Sydney Keating Business Park, or in the Sydney North Saanich Business Park. Yeah. Since then, we've made it really an important part of what I do as an MLA. Is going out, and I've continued what I call kind of a slow moving tour of industry, where I ask, can I come for a tour? And they're like, yeah, absolutely, come for a tour.
Sure.
Because I want to be able to articulate that about $1 billion worth of business transactions happen out of these two business parks in my riding alone.
Yeah.
And people in Greater Victoria don't understand the level of contribution that these two business parks and others, I'll expand it out because I know that you're a region-wide.
Regional, sure, yeah.
But the level of contribution that we make to the world, we make brakes for basic, there's a company here, no, we, there's a company here on the Saanich Peninsula that makes brakes for virtually every single subway system and mass transit system in the world.
Yeah. We wouldn't know what the ocean's weather is if it wasn't for a company located up here.
That's exactly right.
Nicholson, people drive past and see the sign. They have no idea what goes on in there. Scott Plastics, what are they doing in there? People
great,
Viking
cool
Air. Viking Air. We're in the aerospace business here. People don't know that.
That's right.
And all of that, I'll tell you, one of the things that's on our wish list or my wish list for our organization for this year is to better connect with this region up here, with those industries over there, because when we can get them within the fold of the jobs that we represent within this economy, that gives us a louder voice, but it gives them a louder voice that they're now standing side by side with C-SPAN and with NAPIT projects and with Thrifty Foods and all of the other major partners that we have in our organization, representing that element of the economy. How many jobs over there? Probably 1,800?
Well, there's a few thousand from, So
geographically,
exposed.
A little bit separated by the highway from the rest of the region in a way, and probably feel a bit isolated and ignored. We don't ignore them. We feel that they need to be recognized with the rest of our economy, not standing alone out here trying to do what they can do on their own. So involving this part of the economy more in what we do at South Island Prosperity is a necessity for the good of this region entirely and for the peninsula. So that's something that we want to look at. It's one of my goals for that. I have a few months left as CEO. So that's one of the things that I want to try and accomplish in that period of time.
Well, you mentioned workforce, housing, transportation.
Yeah.
Three number one issues. They are the three number one issues.
Count them. Three of them.
And, you know, that was inadvertent that I called them the three number one issues. But they
the
are.
Top
I mean,
three issues.
You could almost say, okay, you can't really parse out which one is
right.
Which one is the most important. They're the top three issues.
But
I hear them regularly.
But you talk to them, the folks over there, these employers and owners and managers, and you ask them where their employees live. They live in Colwood. They live in Saanich. That's the highway. That's the traffic. That's the carbon footprint. That's the time that they could be spending with their family instead of making that commute happen
Cobble
all the time.
Cobble Hill.
They're coming in
Shaunigan
from there.
Lake.
Totally. Making that trip every day.
I so love a ferry across the Saanich Inlet. It just makes so much sense.
What are you going to do about that?
Well, I've been pushing on it.
I know you have. Yeah. But that's another issue that we look at here, that this is a standalone economy up here, but it needs to engage with the rest too. And everything we can do to help catalyze that to make it happen. There's something we're going to roll out soon, called the Mobility Wellness Index.
Right.
And that's how good is your life based on the amount of time you spend in your car getting to and from one point to another. Right. So if you waste, 3 hours a day traveling to and from work, shopping, all that stuff, that's time you could be spending at home. You could be binge watching something. You could be cutting the lawn. You could be hiking.
So I spend 40 minutes two ways when I'm working in the legislature.
Yep.
I tried the bus. So here's the mobility piece. The morning, it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Straight in. It's almost the same, right? It almost takes the same amount of time for me to take the bus into work as it does for me to drive. So convenience, reliability, that's all there. Convenience and reliability get thrown right out the door on my way home.
Yeah.
And so this was the problem. This is a volume at the time of the day that I'm coming home. It's a mess. And so it'll take me an hour and a half, an hour and 40 minutes. You know, depending on what time I get out of that, the legislature.
Out of there, yeah.
So, but I could tell you, I was able to shift a lot of work that I was doing at home and doing when I got down to the office to that bus ride.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant. Have a coffee, listen to a podcast, answer a few emails.
Mm-hmm.
This is time that I was better spent with my kids at home.
Yep.
Right. On both sides of the day. So, no question, the wellness and the ability to deal with some of that work while you're in the midst of your commute.
Yeah,
brilliant.
We were a finalist in something called the Smart Cities Competition that Infrastructure Canada did. 200 applications across the country, 20 finalists. We were one of them. Our whole thing was based on transportation and mobility.
Yeah,
and that was going to be a multi-platform ability to arrange your travel through the day through one app without having to tap, tap, tap all day long.
Yep.
And of course, find out what the most expedient ways of doing that would be. So multimodal is something I know the province is looking at now. Mm-hmm. Really looking forward to their South Island transportation survey that's going to be coming out in the spring. And from that proposal that went in, we've extracted one of the elements. We weren't a winner, by the way. We may reapply. But one of the elements that we extracted from that was something that we're calling the Indigenous Mobility Pilot.
Mm-hmm.
So those who live on the nation areas here, whether it be Sartlip, whether it's Sachem, whether it's Paquachin, whether it's Chianu, whether it's Souk.
Yep.
As you know, as well as anyone, connectivity is a gong show. Transit doesn't serve them because they don't pay into it.
Yep.
Can't afford it. Our proposal is to create, in the simplest of terms, an Indigenous-owned and operated on-demand transit system.
Cool.
Which would be a series of vehicles owned and operated by the nations,
yep.
Which is a revenue stream for them. It would be a safety factor in that nobody's walking down a dark road in the middle of the night to get someplace. It provides jobs, gets people to and from school, to medical appointments, to social appointments, to the economy, to whatever it might be. So we're looking into that right now and are looking for means and ways to make that happen. But like any transit, it would have to be subsidized.
Right.
But the nations would then have the ability to connect to whatever part of the economy they want to connect with or whatever part of the economy they want to create. So that's a goal for us to take that forward. And the subsidy part, I feel, can be very easily replaced with sponsorship.
Right.
Doesn't always have to be the government writing a check to make this stuff happen. There are private entities that we can deal with and I'm happy to deal with would say, why don't you do the right thing and step up and make this happen? So we'll another podcast, we'll talk about that, but that's something we're working on.
And an opportunity for you to bring to me as well when we're not recording, to have a conversation about so that I can take it forward to the Minister of Transportation. Because it's not that we should rely on government to do it, but it's also not that the government shouldn't participate either.
True.
So
yeah, they are aware.
There could be a mix.
But I think that's contingent on what the report will say that comes out.
Of course.
Yeah. So we're anticipating a great outcome from that.
And you know, I don't mean to be too cynical, but there's a lot contingent on the report. What the report says. There's been a lot of reports.
Yes.
And this was kind of my criticism of doing another. And I understand bringing all of the different reports together and putting together a single strategy. I respect that. So what I'm looking forward to is a couple of pieces. And I think that we should use our bodies of water more effectively than we are. And, you know, Royal Bay to Victoria, the Saanich Inlet, there are ways for us to take a look at that a little bit more efficiently. Now, we talked a little bit about the workforce attracting people coming in. You're also attracting businesses. So let's talk about the importation of both business and people. And so these are areas of focus coming up too.
Yeah. So attracting new business here is one part of economic development. Increasing and growing existing business is the number one thing that economic development does. It's easier.
Recruitment and retention.
That's right.
Yep.
So finding new business and new markets for business that exists right now. But also by bringing in new business to the region, it diversifies our economy and it strengthens the economy. So we have a number of companies that we've attracted here from other countries, quite frankly, and from other parts of the world. Some have come from Vancouver. There's a Brazilian company that we brought here about a year and a half ago, who are a tech company that were based in California, head office in Brazil. Wanted to get out of the United States for a number of reasons, for political reasons. They were feeling insecure about being there, wanted to come to Canada, wanted to stay on the West Coast. So they looked at Vancouver and they looked at Greater Victoria. They chose us for a lot of reasons, including quality of life. They're a very family-oriented company. So they have to date moved 17 Brazilian families to this region who live here now. They get together every week and they go to church and then they have a soccer game and they have a barbecue. And they've since started talking to other companies in Brazil. Brazil's a little bit unstable right now.
Yep.
So we now have this long line of companies in Brazil that are getting in touch with us saying, hey, how do we come there? How can we make that happen? So I'll be sending one of our people to Brazil in the spring to go talk to this group and say, come on up. Bring your money, bring your business, bring your jobs. Come and see us. Let's make that happen.
I'm totally not interested to coming in and attracting them to Saanich North in the islands. So. No, that's cool. That's fantastic.
Companies from, interesting, from the United Kingdom, we've started to get some attention. The Brexit factor is in play.
Yeah.
There are American companies that are a bit uneasy with the political climate
Nothing
down
going
there.
On down there these
Holy.
Days.
Holy. So companies are coming in from there. So around the world, we're starting to get a little bit more attention. So we're building up our something called FDI, Foreign Direct Investment Case.
Yep.
So we will be going, frankly, on the road to pitch this region to other parts of the world and industry sectors, including the rest of the province at the BC Tech Summit and things like that, so that we can sort of say, hey, we're more than just a capital region. We're more than just government jobs. There's a whole lot more going on over here and it's a beautiful place to live. So that's, again, something that's on our radar to do.
Awesome. So congratulations. And I know that at some point in the next few weeks, the wonders of podcasting, people can listen to this at any time.
Yeah.
But I got the invite to come and you're going to be hosting an event to introduce these companies to the region and introduce people to the companies and
Serve them some peninsula wine.
Good.
Sample the good life. Just before we wrap it up, you can also watch for some news on us very soon about something called an ocean marine cluster. In other words, taking advantage of the fact that we are on the West Coast and we're surrounded by water. There's an amazing organization here called the Ocean Networks Canada, who are looking at the seabed. How can we sustain it? How can we keep it healthy? How can we best use that resource to our advantage? So making us a center for ocean research is something that we're going to look at. It's so painfully obvious, but it's never been undertaken. So we're going to take a look at building that up as well here. So that's something that's going on. And we're working with one of our municipal partners on something called an economic readiness plan.
Hmm.
So each municipality does have its own economic development strategy, but they may or may not have the bandwidth or the skills to execute it. So we're going to help them do that so that they can get a better idea of what it is that they want to do within their official community plan as they grow. So we have the experts to do. I'm not one of them, but we have people much smarter than me that can go help municipalities do that for the betterment of all of us.
One of the beneficiaries to the local economy, or is that the right word? Yeah.
Sure.
The local economy has been the Ocean Marine Center on the Saanich Peninsula here.
Correct.
A lot of people have left working for the federal government. It's a federal institute of ocean sciences. They've spun off and there's a number, dozens of businesses
yes.
here on the Saanich Peninsula that were, you know, former government employees that are now doing specialized work in whatever their field is. And it's all, a lot of it's marine.
Mm-hmm.
I've featured a business out here on my blog and in my slow moving tour of industry, Titan Boats.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Family owned.
Absolutely. Aluminum vessels, some of the best in the world, selling boats around the world. Shockwave Seats, another business that I've toured, great company, building marine, we build buoys, for scientific
access.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this has always been in the back of my mind as the type of industries that would be very much worthwhile attracting.
Yeah.
When you got, as we were saying before we hit record, we got all this water around us,
yes.
you know, to try to specialize in something else is kind of weird. So this is, that's something that we should be focusing on.
I was talking to a company who manufacture boats in a landlocked municipality. And I said, so where do you send your boats when you, they go to Europe and they go to Asia. I said, well, how do you get them to the coast to ship them? Well, we drive them, you know, we put them on a truck, we put them on a train, we send them to the coast. And when I said, well, why don't you build them here instead? And that kind of, you can charge the same price, but your margin is going to go up because you eliminate the shipping cost. Oh, can we do that?
Said,
yeah, you can actually.
Lots of room right over there by the airport.
We got some shoreline here. We should probably chat. So, that's economic development, right? And that's kind of what we do.
Awesome. So, we have a few more things on the list, but let's start to wrap this up.
Okay.
You have a few more. You mentioned you have a few more months as your interim.
I'm interim. I'm filling in a mat leave.
That's right.
So Emily DeRosenroll is going to be back in March.
In March.
Yeah.
I'm also. Did you hear? I am also filling an interim.
Yes, I knew that.
I'm also filling an interim role.
And
that starts on Monday.
Well, you've done this before too. Oh, does it really? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So this is my last weekend of
freedom.
Well,
keeping
I've
your
done
own
this
hours.
Before. I did this for 2 years.
Yes.
Almost 2 years from 13 to 15.
But you didn't have the whole MLA thing on top of that to deal with.
I did not.
Right, so.
I did not. And we're in the process, as you noted today, we're in the process of hiring because we've got some staff shortage now. One of our staff members has moved on. So lots of new for me in 2020. What about you? What's your...
That's a good question.
You filled in as the interim CEO, but you were the business development person. Is that right?
Yeah, I was the director of development. So I'm the one that created events and found membership and sponsorships and engagement with media and the public and members. So I'll probably continue doing that and
slide
go back,
back
to that role. And when Emily comes back, then we'll have a transition period. There's been a lot happened in the last year. And as you well know, these things don't slow down. You're going to, again, do a remarkable job. You would have been a good leader on the ongoing basis, but I know that being interim means that you won't be standing for the leadership going forward because you're a young guy and you've got a young family. So thank you for stepping up in the interim. I will probably continue doing that and other steps. I don't know. I'm going to get through this and put all my energy into what I'm doing now and assume that I will continue doing this and maybe some other things. I might look for some, I've been on lots of boards of directors. I might look at doing something like that and seeing what talents I might offer to other people and see what's up.
There's this sense in the business that I'm in here in politics. It's like, hurry up.
Mm.
You got to hurry up. You got to do it now, do it. One of the local media people said, well, I thought Adam had more ambition. And I was like, it's not ambition, man.
No.
Like it has very, I'm an ambitious person, but it also has to fit with what's right.
Yeah.
And the time and my mom gave me some really good advice.
Moms are good at that.
Mom's advice is sage advice. I should listen to it. I listen to it more than I do. No. to make sure that I'm a counselor before I run for chief. That's what she said. You make sure you've got the experience. And I've only been in MLA for 2 years. It's 3 years.
Yeah.
It's been
longer.
A very eventful time.
No kidding.
And we're thrust right into the middle of an interesting situation in my first term here. But, you know, it's important to figure out the job and to do it well before thinking that, you can just go on and become the leader and do all that. This is a burden that over the last few days is my shoulders have started to feel.
I'll bet.
And I don't even have it yet.
No.
So,
Well, again, having done it before, and you've certainly worked side by side with Andrew, yep. who I've known for years and years as well. Known both of you guys for a long time, actually. Yeah. And
Time marches on, as Metallica says.
That's right. In a previous life, Andrew and I worked together to create something called the SchoolNet Weather System.
Right.
Across the island, where we had this live weather data that's available all the time. So, you know, and he was actually on a board that I chaired at one time, the initial Janice Place board, because I was the fundraising chair for that. And Andrew was on the initial board that we had with that.
Interesting.
Little known fact.
And sometimes when we were sitting in the legislature and his computer screen was up, he'd be checking the school weather net.
That's right.
At the various schools across
the island.
Yeah. Talking about it. So thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you.
The best of luck in 2020 to the South Island Prosperity Partnership.
Thank you.
And to you and your final few months here as the interim CEO and going back to your role and whatever else you decide to do. Thanks a lot for coming in and hanging out.
Thank you for the opportunity. SouthIslandProsperity.ca is the website, and my phone number's on there if anybody wants to chat more.
And you're Bruce Williams?
I am so.
And I'm Adam Olson. I'm the MLA for Saanich North and the Islands. You can get a hold of me by emailing me at adam.olson.mla@leg.bc.ca. My constituency office is open from 10 till 4 in beautiful Sydney by the Sea. Our phone number is 250-655-5600. If there's any advocacy you need, my office is open. As I mentioned, we're going through a bit of a staff transition in the early part of January here, so I hope that you will exercise a little bit of patience with us as we work through that. And you can find me on all the social media channels. You can find me on Facebook, reluctantly on Twitter, and I am also on Instagram, posting beautiful pictures every now and then. So until we reconnect, thanks for listening, and until next time, hi aqua.